grams per cubic centimetre. There are only a few relevant elements within military application that are dense enough to fit in the volume of those missile boxes and have enough mass to account for the substantial sag in the gravity cushion. Osmium is too rare here, and to account for the high mass, it would need to be in its pure state, which would be ridiculous because it is nearly impossible to machine form in that state. There's plutonium, of course, which could be part of the puzzle, but why hide plutonium? Why the deception? I lean toward iridium. Iridium is a hard transition metal, three times as dense as iron. It is often used in X-ray optics and as a contact metal because of its resistance to arc erosion. More importantly, it is used in radioisotope thermoelectric generators because it can withstand operating temperatures up to 2,000 Celsius. Unless they've nonsensically changed the default gravity cushions on only half the skiffs, or unless Darrow is making substantial repairs to the Morning Star's reactors, which I can assume he is not, because that does not explain the deception, he is either building a massive secondary generator or a sustained EMP device of unprecedented scale. I close the poetry book. That night, Glirastes is absent again. A Thessalonican Chianti is served with lamb drizzled with rosemary-infused olive oil. The wine is rancid. I spit it across the table after my first sip. Exeter appears from nowhere.
Is the wine not to the Dominus's satisfaction?
No, I say. It is detestable.
It is our finest vintage, Dominus, Thessalonica 35.
How embarrassing for your taste buds. Is the cellar in the same place? I'll pick my own wine, since you seem incapable of basic competency. I stalk past him and throw open the cellar door, which is located in the mouth of a freestanding merman statue. Rounding the corner at the cellar's bottom stair, I follow a light to the back and find Glirastes waiting for me amongst dusty wine racks with a bottle of champagne. He pops it as I enter.
"I believe champagne is in order when one returns from the grave," he says.
His hug is more sincere this time. He clings to me.
"My old young friend, you're a sight for weary eyes. Don't make that face. These walls down here are quite impenetrable to that little spy trinket. Quicksilver is such an idiot. Mass produces everything. No individual artistry. Very gauche in his spirit selection as well. We haven't much time, so let us be quick."
I sit and share the champagne and answer his barrage of questions. When I have finished, he leans back and traces the rim of his champagne flute with his pinky.
"That is quite a tale. All that to come here? All that to confront your nemesis? Didn't you read the tragedians, boy? Don't you know how this quest for revenge will end? What if he recognized you?"
"Wrecking balls seldom stop for conversations," I say.
"Yes. You can practically see that red girl hanging in his eyes, can't you? Gory damn Nero. Couldn't just slap her on the wrist. I blame him for all this. Him and that idiot Fabii. And that idiot Bellona. Frankly, your ranks are replete with idiots. So many, in fact, one might suspect if they were a little poorer, a little more victimized, a little more burdened with trial, they might have had the common sense to band together instead of sniping each other in an operatic game of emotional suicide chess. To make matters worse, it hasn't changed, not a bit. They still bicker. Carthii and Saud, Votum and everyone. And you expect them to hold hands with the Rim?"
He laughs.
"You've always been a romantic."
"I thought it was a fellowship of two," I reply.
"Oh, shut up. You could have contacted me," he says,
thinly trying to hide his grief.
"You could have let me know you weren't dead."
"You have to understand what I saw." He raises an eyebrow, always curious about Palatine gossip, especially the first-hand sort. It's not his most noble quality. "I saw Arja hacked to ribbons, and Octavia ripped here to here. I traced the path Darrow's blade made. I saw the jackal's bombs detonating, and watched as Darrow pulled his tongue out. I saw my godfather ally with Darrow for the briefest flicker to down Lilith Alfaran's ships before they destroyed my home. He shudders. I saw all those people with their plans strangled by the webs they wove. I wanted out. To his credit, Darrow spared me and sent me away with Cassius. All this time, I thought he might have, Blerastes says. I would not have helped him if I really thought he murdered you. I'm not sure if I believe that, but he does. So I disappeared, I say. And did you find what you were looking for? Did you find peace? It's not out there, at least not for me. Some men can stare at their feet and pretend the world isn't falling apart. I cannot. And behind the Grimace banner you rally, Atalantia is your saviour, he sneers. She is a monster, a woman with a cape of cadavers as long as the Via Gloria. You know that, or you wouldn't be here. He squints at me. She's going to use atomics, isn't she? Chemicals, I admit. He grows terribly quiet. If that is the woman you follow, then the worlds are already lost. There are certain realities, I begin. He interrupts. Stop! I've heard that all before. From yourself? I ask. Is that why you helped Darrow? Yes! He snaps, slamming his glass down so hard on the table it shatters and opens a gash on his hand. He stares at the blood seeping out. Yes. It wasn't supposed to be that way. Gold became cruel after the fall, beyond cruel, as if it was their laxity that led to rebellion. Darrow is right in some things, you know. The metal miners here barely live past 30, and the slaves, they actually call them that now. Not contractors or pioneers, slaves. He shakes his head. I just didn't realize the price my planet, my home, would have to pay for my spasm of hope.
Is it worth the price? I ask.
What's the alternative? Atalantia? Purges and camps? No, I'd rather we all burn nice and quick than line up for her pleasure.
He stands, ending the conversation.
I know you mean well, but if I've learned anything, meaning well isn't enough. Whatever you thought I could do for you, I can't do it. I won't. Nothing good comes of good intentions.
He puts a hand on my shoulder as he departs. I tried to let it be his choice to help me, but in the end he leaves me no alternative but to force him, as my grandmother taught. I was there in Tyche when the water came in. I lie. He quarter turns to me. Thousands poured to the water colossus to seek its heights for shelter, knowing the work of Glerastes would give them safety. Glerastes' genius would give them shelter. When the wave came in, it swamped the colossus. For a moment, I thought it would pull even it out to sea, but those people were right to believe in your work. As the waves rolled back, your colossus endured. But of the people, nothing remained. Why do you think Atalantia is using chemicals instead of nukes? She couldn't buy you all those years ago, so now she'll take all your precious works for herself. I return upstairs to finish my dinner without appetite. My words will worm their way into Glerastes' brain. When I am finished with the meal, Exeter comes to the table. He looks at the bottle I brought up.
I trust your choice in wine was satisfactory.
It's a stubborn vintage.
I have faith in it, Dominus, and in your discerning taste. Perhaps a nightcap of the fortifying variety.
I wake in the night to hear the expected sound of bare feet in the hallway. There's a peculiar wheezing sound from my arm where they injected me with the anti-rads. My door opens and Glerastes stands in the doorway, illuminated by the shadowy light of a green glow lamp.
The spike is frozen. To them you'll appear to be sleeping through the night. I want to show you something.
The green light casts eerie shadows on the artifacts along the walls as Glorastes leads me down a dark hallway. Rain lashes the windows. Low thunder groans. Glorastes stops at the end of a hall near a large wooden door with an old-fashioned lock. He searches a huge ring for the right key and unlocks it with a satisfying clunk. Light blossoms in the darkness, and I smile. The room is as delightful as in memory, domed with a rendering of deep space. Books lining every wall. I remember the first he gave me, Selenius's Meditations. Antiquated machines of distant ages stand covered in dust. He fusses over the dozen teacups scattered about the room.
Really should let the servants in here, but they may twist the wrong knob. Then boom!
He slams a hand on the table.
All dead! Now, where did I put it? Ah, this way.
Behind a 3D marble printer and a statue of himself with an absurdly generous phallus, he pulls back a canvas covering, unsettling a cloud of dust, to reveal a model of a sphere city as big as the two of us put together. Intricate parks and public buildings wind together, defying gravity, as the surface of the city bends upside down on itself to create the spiral impression of a human eye. He waves his hand over the pupil, and the city begins to turn clockwise. He sits in a drawing chair to watch me walk around the model. It is, I begin, and pretend I cannot find the right words. Of course I remember his favourite poems. It is what? He asks in trepidation.
Without flaw. Use more sophisticated language.
I reply, cities and thrones and powers stand in time's eye, almost as long as flowers, which daily die, but as new buds put forth to glad new men, out of the spent and unconsidered earth, the cities rise again.
I missed you, lad.
He sighs back in his chair.
I haven't had a good critic in years.
What is your city called?
Oculus.
I circle the model. I imagine it's meant to be in orbit?
Yes, or deep space. I knew you would understand.
He runs a finger down a central aerial boulevard.
It was my last commission before the fall. Needless to say, there was not much demand for cities with personality after that.
Who commissioned it?
Regulus Arg Soon, old Uppity Quick himself. I sent him a finished model just like this one, but we never broke ground. It was to be my greatest work, one I'll never see completed now. You might have noticed there is something whimsical about it.
He smiles.
He asked me to build a city for a child who had never seen anything else. Of course it was just an expression, but I took it to heart. I based it off of your eye, in fact. The only child to seldom annoy me. Of course, I never had children, didn't have the time or the inclination. But I always assumed, vainly, that mine would be as curious as you were.
He must be shaken deeply to presume to say that aloud to me. It really is one of the most marvellous of his creations, this Oculus. For all its grace, it speaks of wild, hopeful ambition.
Darrow didn't even look twice at it when he came here, Glorastes murmurs. He sees me as nothing more than a tool. I suppose it is human nature. Gold saw me as a novelty to flaunt. Mids let their jealousy label me a social climber. The lows loved me, then hated me, then loved me. All of them thought they understood my work. And maybe they did. But only you really ever understood me.
You were the one who told me a great artist can never be fully understood, I reply. Even you must suffer the tedium of a medium.
Did I ever tell you the story of the blind copper?
I don't believe so. Of course I know the story. It was in his Securitas file, gleaned from his own journals, and was the key to my story of the waves and the Colossus. I forego a stool and sit on the floor, just as I did as a child. He wants to see me as a curious boy, not a scarred, cunning judge.
When I was a young apprentice, my master maker told me of a copper with a disease of the eye, one which surpassed even our civilization's ingenuity to cure. When he felt his vision finally fading, he went to a bench and sat before the library of Heliopolis. Each day he went, and his world grew smaller and darker, until one day his sight was gone entirely. For years afterward he would go to that bench and sit, and in the darkness he could still see the green copper dome, the philosopher kings in all their marbled glory, the water gardens, and the orbital torch. Of all the things he wanted to remember, it was the beauty of the architecture.
He sighs.
My master told me the story to impress the importance of our craft. I was a busy mind, busier still, when I found my first taste of celebrity. Twice a week I would attend the dinner parties of Oriat. It might seem common to you, he says, with small embarrassment, but imagine what it meant to me. An orange from the sledge, a guest of Votum and Augustans and even Loons. I was treated with dignity by the finest company in the world. The sovereign herself called me a genius. In their names I built monuments, libraries, cities. Yet, at the unveiling of my greatest work,
the water colossus.
Correct, he continues. I felt empty, standing there listening to the rich tell me what beauty I had made. I could see it, but I could not feel it. I don't know why, but I remembered the story of that copper. I sought out my master and discovered after many weeks of searching that the blind copper still lived. I went to visit him. He was a ward of the state, by then, living to die in a government loyalty ward. I asked him about the story, and he laughed. I didn't go for the building, he said. I went to feed the pigeons and watch the children play in the water and the families line up for sweets and to see boys flirt with girls.
Clirastes says nothing, and for a long time we listen to the rain on the windows.
He went to see life, Clirastes says at last. From that moment to this, that is why I make, to see the life that grows around the dead stone I stack. For what is a building without its audience? What is a city without its people? Now,
he traces the veins in his hands,
now that life disappears, those people become dust. Soon there will be nothing left but my stone and the bones of my city.
His glassy eyes find mine.
I'm not a traitor, no matter what you think, no matter what Atalantia calls me. I thought Darrow's crusade impractical, but inevitable. When he took the planet, I helped him because I thought I could protect life. I failed. I failed so terribly. He told me he would only use the storm gods for electrical interference and cloud cover, but he lied, and now Tyche is gone.
His eyes follow motes of dust floating through the light. His robes make soft sounds as he leans forward and runs his hands over his head.
I've been building something with his engineers, something that will help his army escape the planet they broke. But even if he does escape before Atalantia attacks, what will become of us? Are the buildings to be saved because they are rare and beautiful, and the people put upon the pale because they are common?
His hands drop from his head, and he looks up at me like a drowning old man.
I don't know what to do, Lysander. Tell me, what am I to do?
You can trust in me, I reply.
The last time I trusted a man, Tyche was swallowed by the sea.
Then trust the boy you knew. His eyes are forlorn as they search mine.
Is he still alive, after all this horror?
Yes, I say, reaching up to fold his thin hands in mine. And he needs your help. The people must show Atalantia that they did not abet the enemy, that they did not simply wait to be saved. They save themselves. I promise she will see that. I promise we will show that to the worlds with spectacle they have never before seen. There's a knock at the door.
Begone, Exeter.
Exeter enters anyway.
Apologies, sir, but the Dominus requested a nightcap of the fortifying variety.
He strides into the room, followed by the entirety of Clerastes's remaining staff.
What is the meaning of this? Clerastes shouts. Can't you see we are...
Exeter goes swiftly to a knee and bends his head to me. The low-colour staff join him.
The heir of Selenius has returned, Exeter proclaims. The loyal stand ready, my sovereign.
I take Clerastes's hand in mine. There are more men and women in this city who believe in the order of the society more than the empty promises of the rising. I do not know them, but you know them, and they know you. Pick the most loyal and the most influential of each colour, and tell them the heir of Selenius has returned. He has not forgotten them, and he asks them to join him in taking back their rightful home from the Martian marauders. Not for Votum, not for Atalantia, but for Heliopolis and the Society.
Chapter 65 Lyria Ulysses. What do you think? Volga asks me. Sleet rolls in from the sea to pour down on us. We crouch low behind a jagged scree of rocks, peering through scavenged oculars at a small fishing town. Several hundred homes lie scattered on the coastline like raisins in crumbling pastry. The weathered buildings are made from local rock and domed with metal roofs capped with winter sludge. Warm light glows from slits in their shutters. I scan the air for the Vox patrols that have been looking for us over the past weeks. The sea bucks and heaves, rocking the few small boats left in the harbour. Nothing rides the wind but seahawks and gulls. I imagine them rushing home, just like the villagers, before the squall comes in full. I wish we were in one of those little houses, maybe sitting by the fire with big blankets and socks. Not the thin polymer socks they gave out at the camp, the wool ones they gave us in the Telemannus household, so thick you can curl your toes in them. Look at that. The red was right, Victra says. She jabs her finger at three long metal poles rising up from a grey building hunched along the promontory north of the town. It looks like some old military installation. Several old flyers are parked in front of it, and from the snow piling up, they look like they haven't been moved in days. There is a radio tower here. I could feel its vibrations through the parasite, growing in intensity as we crept nearer across the highlands. Aside from those vibrations, the parasite has been quiet since I saw Harmony. But by the fact that Victra even listened to me, I know she knows what's in my skull. All this trepidation is giving me cankers, she says. Much as I'd like to give birth in a freezing glen like a sow, it would be a dreary inconvenience if wolves ate my little girl before she could even walk. We use the array to boost our signal. We're in my fortresses at Hippolyte or Attica by tomorrow morning. As if to taunt her, the highland wolves howl in the distance. Or is it just the wind? She looks more annoyed than afraid. To be fair, I'd pity the wolves that tried to make a meal out of this woman. She's tougher than nature itself. 9 months pregnant, she's set a pace I can barely match. I was not asking you, Volga says in exhaustion. Of course. Why ask the peerless Skard who has led two iron reigns when there's a perfectly ignorant mindlass to consult for strategic advice. Because you are reckless, Volga says. You act like you carry an army everywhere. You would not make it 2 days as a freelancer. Now be quiet. Lyria found this place, so Lyria's opinion matters more than yours right now. Victra sulks back against the rocks, disturbing the snow in a blackberry shrub above her. Even after 2 weeks of plodding through rain and snow and sleeping under the shelter of trees, she manages to look glamorous. Her jade earrings, which she refuses to remove, blaze against the snow. Meanwhile, I think I've somehow got fleas. By her count, Victra should have had the baby weeks ago, though how many she doesn't say. I'd pull it out of her myself if I was sure her private bits wouldn't bite my hand off at the elbow. I nearly wish you'd let the Red Hand find me. Would have been preferable to watching you two bumble about like drunk mummers as I starve to death. You ate all the rations, I snap, scratching my head in irritation. I'm eating for two. You're barely one. And you're the one the Red Hand wants, I reply. How many of their mines did you own again? Not enough, apparently. We are all hungry and frustrated, Volga tries. Fig's black orb is nestled under one of her big arms. Though she lost the pack of money in a river crossing, she hasn't let the orb out of her sight since she stole it from the wreckage. You should have let me try to kill that deer, Victra sneers at Volga. Even carrying around this gory damn asteroid in my stomach, I could have stalked it better than you. Can't hunt, can't start a fire, can't navigate by starlight. I swear, you are by far the worst obsidian I have ever had the displeasure of laying eyes upon. Have you two never been outside before? You told us we couldn't have a fire, I say, because of the trackers. Immaterial, it's your rank ignorance that matters. Volga considers making a comment, but somehow her patience prevails. I will go down and talk to them, she says. Victra and I laugh, then glare at each other. Volga looks offended. I will call Ephraim. He will come for me. You might not give the best first impression, I say gently. Victra snorts. She means you look like an electrocuted rock monster. Volga touches her huge head of hair. It is the humidity. And there is no way I let you call Ephraim fucking Horn. I will go and call my legions in Attica and Hippolyte, Victra says. They'll recognize you. You're one of the most famous people in the world. Yes, I am, aren't I? They'll know I can pay. What if there's Red Hand there? I ask. We've watched for 3 hours. Well, they don't exactly wave flags, do they? We lost those trackers days ago. Lost the appetite after I visited their camp. She did, killing 4 of the ones with nose mods before running back to us, cackling. For all they know, we're 40 clicks west of here. I don't see any material or transport. If there's any here, we kill them. She fondles the hilt of her razor under her coat like it's a bloody damn baby itself. It's not like we need to hold a town council. We just need that transmitter. You're being entirely overcautious. The fact that she's even letting us have a voice shows how far her pregnancy has progressed. It'll come any moment. I look down at her belly. You sure you're up to that sort of thing? I'm pregnant, not an invalid. You just don't like people being decent to you, do you? Blister, that's what you are. Red, puffy and irritating. I'm going to go piss. Then I'm going to go down there and use that transmitter to call my men. Can't reach my main force in Hippolyte, by the look of that army, but I've a full legion at my fortress in Attica. 50,000 of my house troops. If they were doing their jobs, they'd be scouring this countryside by now. But I'll roust those lazy piglets, and we'll be having baths by tomorrow morning, ladies. then supper till you're both fat as hens, then back to the kidnapper you go, and I get my loves and gear up for war. I glare after her as she stumbles away across the rocks. A bath does sound nice, I say. Ephraim would come for me, Volga repeats. I remember Ephraim's face when he heard the sovereign had Volga. But would he try for her twice? I give up guessing and glare at Victra. You are doing a good thing, Volga says. Just think about having that bath and a real meal. Oh, leave off. How do you not choke her to death? Sleet gathers on her eyebrows as she considers it. 2 nights ago, I thought about it after she called me a geriatric walrus. But I do not think it would work. She fought beside Seffi herself and Darrow. No, she is too much for me, even now, unless I was able to shoot her from afar. That was a joke. Oh, her eyes flick left. Ez was mine. Right. I glance back at the village. There's little movement. Likely all huddled inside, eating dinner, what with this weather. I don't like it. There's the sounds of rocks moving behind us. We turn to see Victra stumbling back, fresh annoyance on her face. Of all the gory inconveniences! She looks up at the weather. With the sleet gathering on her cheeks and her hair matted back, she makes me think of a statue I saw in Hyperion, Lady Victory, the wife of Silenius the Lightbringer. Sorry, ladies, she says with a wry grin. She holds up glistening fingers. Little monster's coming. Looks like she's a mover. That settles it, I say, knowing we can't risk going into the old installation. But we need shelter. Me, probably even more than Victra's newborn will. Thing will probably come out with fangs in a silk cloak. I rush down the scree. At the edge of the village, a stooped old red chisels ice off the roof of his stone house. I don't see anyone else out, and his house looks large enough and far off enough from the others to not draw too many eyes. Lo, I call. He doesn't hear me over the howl of the wind. Lo! He turns to squint down at me through a snow mask. Then he sees the pistol in my hand. I need your help, brother. You asking or telling, lass? Telling, I suppose. He awkwardly climbs off the roof. You been out in that? Who's in the house? I ask. None your... He looks to the hills. Scorcher says it is my... My kids, he says. He nods to the sky. Saw the firefight. Who else you got out there? I wave Volga and Victra down the hill. They slump forward in the gloom, sticking behind shrubs to keep out of sight of the rest of the town. Volga is less than polite. She lifts the man by his collar and breaches the house, holding her rifle like a pistol in one hand and the man dangling in her other. Victra and I follow. A young girl, maybe 12, and a boy of 16 stare at us as we come in, wet and armed. The boy bolts upright from the table and grabs a heavy mug, nearly spilling his soup. The girl stares at us from the kitchen, trembling. Her hands knot the corners of her grease-stained apron. All red, Breyer, all's well, the man says. All's well. These are... new friends. The boy holds his mug tight, looking between his father and the huge women who've got his father at gunpoint. I kick the door shut and start drawing the curtains. Volga, set him down, Victra says. We do not know him. You're in his home. Be polite. They're just reds. No offence. Volga warily sets the red man down. He smiles nervously. Strong lass there. How quaint, Victra says, magnanimously of the small home. She has to bend to not hit her head on the timber crossbeams. Apologies for the intrusion. I desire hot water, clean cloth, soap, pen, paper, and the hardest liquor you can provide. Fear not, this won't be a hostile interaction, unless your manners become as dreadful as the ones to which we've been reduced. By tomorrow morning, you will be 1 million credits richer, and we will be gone. Volga's already searching the house for weapons and comms. Take off that absurd domino, your mask man, and your name. Volga finds two old rifles in the cupboard, as well as a pistol. She disassembles them in three easy movements and takes small pieces from each for her pockets.
Cormac O'Vardros.
The man pulls off his snow-crusted mask. Despite his shock of white hair, he's not quite so old as I thought, but he is stooped and his right leg seems janky. Maybe artificial. Deep lines groove his bearded face. He takes in Victra, her bulging waistline, and nods.
Course. Allred, boil water. Breyer, be a good lass and get the linens from your room.
Volga follows the girl into the other room, as if she were going to get rocket launchers. Cormac gestures to my gun with a twinkle in his eye.
Big gun for a little lass. Think you need it?
Depends on you.
Not what I meant.
He nods to Volga and Victra.
You got them. What you need that for?
I keep the pistol anyway.
Bedroom?
Thought you'd never ask. He leads me across the small common room to one of the home's two bedrooms, as Volga, finished with her search for now, tries to help Victra out of her wet clothing. Victra slaps her hands away.
Just mind our hosts.
She follows us into the bedroom and starts undressing. Cormac watches without expression. Volga comes in, picks him up with one hand and shoves him out the door, back into the common room.
You expecting visitors? She asks. In this squall, he says, laughing,
but his eyes dart to his children in worry.
No. No visitors.
Good. We will be cozy then. The sound of their voices muffle as I close the door to a crack. The bedroom is small and simple. A narrow bed with heavy quilts lies in the corner next to a coil heater. A pair of old miner boots like my pa's hang on the wall along with a rusted sling blade. There's a small crochet on one of the bedside stools and a little glass filled with holly and red winter berries. Must be his wife left it there.
Where's your wife? I ask Cormac, opening the door halfway. She's out to sea till week's end with the rest of my kin. Not much for boats myself. I tend the homestead.
Volga takes over the questioning as I shut the door again. Victra tosses her clothes into the corner. I am startled by the sight of her body. Her back is heavily muscled and broad. It's a history of scars, including two bullet holes along her spine. More scars cover her arms, her buttocks, her powerful thighs. More old wounds than a whole drill team. Respect. Have the contractions started? I ask, handing her pen and paper I found on the counter.
You japing?
She grins. Lost my mucus plug days back. Been having contractions the last 30 clicks.
You didn't say anything. You two worry like hens. Thought I could hold it till we got to the transmitter, but you two are right. Big building. Anything could be in there.
She starts writing on the paper, whistling as she does.
You ever been pregnant? She asks.
I'm shy 19.
Well, you are red. Anyway, it's like getting punched by a telemannus. Got a real world breaker in here.
She leans naked against the wall, not a lick given for modesty. I strip off the top quilt and make up the bed. She looks up from her writing in amused contempt.
What in Jove's name are you doing?
Making up the bed for you. She goes back to writing.
Why?
Thought you might want to lay down?
I am daughter of Julii, she says, without looking up from the paper. Not some mine wench who gives birth on her back. I stand when I deliver. All I need from you is silence and absence, and that water and alcohol to wash my hands. Be polite to our hosts, please. Chuffed, I slam the door behind me. In the common room, the water is beginning to boil on the thermal stove. Allred, the boy, glares at me as I ask him to take it into the bedroom. He's a gangly one with a temper. Reminds me of my own brother Dagon. His sister brings her linens out of her room. Small and elfin-faced, she wears the skirts of a woman and a thick shawl. She shuffles nervously as I smile at her. "What's your name?" I ask her. "Was it Breyer?" She nods. "Sorry if we're giving you a fright. Promise we're good folk. Just a little lost is all. Where's your ma?" She looks at the ground. "She's mute," her father says from the table, where he leans back, sipping ale from his mug. "Breyer, come here, love." The girl goes and stands next to him. He kisses the back of her head and gives me a grimace. "Been that way for years, ever since her ma..." He squeezes her. She looks anything but comfortable. There's shouting as Allred delivers the water and booze. He comes back from Julii's tirade, flushed red, with a note from Victra. It's just 50 lines of numbers. "What's this?" I call. "Cryptogram," she shouts. "Best I could come up with on short notice. Give it to Volga. She can use the array's main uplink to send it. But not while I'm in labour. I need a bodyguard." "I could take it," I say, peeking through the door. "Do you know how to force link to the holonet and send a private encoded message?" I say nothing. "No. So stop trying to prove yourself and let the freelancer earn her keep." I mutter curses as I cross the room to give Volga her instructions and the cryptogram. "Ah, a cryptogram," she says, one eye on the reds. I don't like the look of Cormac much either. "Oh, 50 lines. She did this in her head? Apparently. Wow. Yeah, she knows." Volga tucks it away, and I schlep over to the table to twiddle my thumbs. "Said your name is Cormac?" Volga asks the man from the door. She leans against it like a sentry on duty. "That's right, love. You got some good common on you." "Why shouldn't I?" she asks. "Didn't mean nothing by it. Sorry, always running me gob." He winces and sips from his mug. He's far younger than I thought he was, even on second inspection. Not an old man at all. Maybe 30. Why is his hair so white? His hands are heavy and scarred. Eyes blood red and set in a passive, kind face with a natural frown. I tap my foot in agitation. I don't like him one bit. "I am Volga. This is Lyria," Volga says neutrally. "We're not going to hurt you, I promise. We only need a place for the night. She's in labour." "Thought gold's hatched out of big metal eggs?" "They do not," he smiles. "Joke. You could have asked nicely. Would have put you up. Be criminal to turn out a full-on woman in this." His eyes dart to the drapes over the windows. "Well, you see," Volga begins. I interrupt her. "Where are you from, Cormac?" He sighs. "Can my kids go to their rooms? They don't need to be around women like you." He nods to our guns. Volga looks ashamed. "Just the little one," she says. "The boy stays where we can see him." Cormac's son drags a chair close to the fire and sits staring at it with his arms crossed. Breya looks at us, to her father. "Go on," he says with a little smile. "Breya, go." She looks at the ground and slips away to the room, closing the door with barely a sound. Cormac sighs. "Addled girl, but sweet. Appreciate the kindness." His chair creaks as he leans back in it. "There were some men looking for you, but I reckon you know that. Bad sort." "Red Hand," I ask. "That's right," he says with a solemn face. "Looking for a gold, they said. Victra Aujulii. Didn't say anything about the two of you. Volga meets my eyes. That's her, ain't it? The Julii. The shoulders are hollow. If they find out you were here... They won't, Volga says. We will not endanger your family. We already have, I say. Cormac and I know the rules. What's done's done, Cormac says. Red Hand don't trouble us much, being as we're clan of the Reaper. But since the old tribes started kicking in their teeth, they come down the coast more often. They'll butcher the village for this. Anyone else you see come in? I shake my head, watching him very carefully. We just need to use your transmitter, reach Julii's people, and it's like we were never here. Can you help us with that? Yep, he says. Got the code to the building, I do. You want to go now? Seeing something I don't, Volga lets her finger click the safety off her rifle. Her voice goes deep and husky. You Legion, he chuckles. Forth, formally. Why formally? War's still on. He pulls up his left leg and sets it on the table, jerking his pants up to show a clunky artificial limb. Got this baby in the rat war. Now I'm just a fisherman. Speaking of which, we got some extra stew and bread if you're hungry. My stomach growls, but it doesn't seem smart to take food from someone we don't know. Not with the Red Hand crawling about. You think I poisoned Miss Stew before you came in here? He asks. That's some swell foresight I got. Go on. I'll sit here, hands where you can see 'em. Even if I was the Fury herself, doubt I'd try much with an obsidian and a peerless under me roof with me children. Warm and filled with soup and fresh bread, I watch Cormac flirt with Volga. He's tied her about his finger with rat war stories. He seems nice as they come, but so was Ephraim. Volga peeks in periodically on Victra like a worrying maid and paces as if it was her baby about to be delivered. She only sits back at the table with Cormac and me when Victra yells something with a lot of syllables at her. Victra's second stage of labour is not long in lasting. The storm comes in full outside as I bring her a glass of water. She chugs it down in one gulp. Sleet clatters its claws against the window. How are our hosts? I think the girl's sleeping, boy's just stewing, and Cormac's spinning stories to Volga now. You trust him? Victra asks. No, don't know him. I say we tie him up. This is my planet, she says. I don't fear a man and two children. But you got a blood war on you. You know well as I do what that means. She doesn't dismiss me this time. If only the world still had manners. She sighs longingly. That'll be all, thank you. I don't leave. You know, I'm not an idiot, I say. I've seen more babies born than you have. Delivered half a dozen myself. She crosses her arms and leans against the wall, still naked, her skin lit ruby by the heater's glowing coils. Let me guess, it's a tribal tradition. That's right. I cross my arms. Me ma taught me, and her ma taught her. My mother taught me how to blockade a planet with nothing but asteroids and gravity haulers, she replies. And how useful is that now? I'm in labour. Please spare me the recitation of your culture's antiquated but treasured ways. Shut the door behind you. Volga is like a wounded puppy. I set my shoulders square up with her. All I'm saying is it's at least several or more weeks late, right? You said that yourself. You might need help. All my babies are fashionably late, she replies. She sighs when she sees I'm not leaving. You deliver that blind one, the one in the Citadel. His name's Liam. Was he blind at birth, or did you boggle it up? Trying to make me cry and run away, I ask. She was. Words don't stab so deep as they used to. He was premature. And yeah, I was there. I cut the life string with my own hands. Life string? Quaint. Your sister didn't cut it herself? She asks in surprise. You lot do that? She frowns. Why wouldn't we? I just thought you had doctors, morphone, crystal glasses to sip from. Please. Only pixies use morphone, and the only person I had in my room when I gave birth to my three girls is the man that put them inside me. She softens and laughs. Maybe she realizes we've got something in common after all. Hilarious, really. I've seen that man pull a knife out of his own eye and keep running. I've seen him face down a stained and smile, but he was shaking like a leaf soon as he saw me dilate, like he's never been down there before. Men. If I asked him to cut the cord, he'd probably faint. It's the mother's job. You should know that. My sister chose who got to cut it, I say. It's an honour. Oh, please. It may seem insignificant, but it's enfeebling. It's saying she's too weak to do it herself. It's important to finish the things you start, blister. Remember that when you have a little squirt. What statement does it make to your baby if you let someone else do it? Laying there with women sopping your brow with wet cloths and preening over you like you're a plague victim. She wrinkles her nose and juts her jaw upward. Tigresses don't need nursemaids. Neither should we. My sister wasn't weak. Maybe not, but she let others convince her she was. You do realise we're not all you. I'm dreadfully aware of that. Act all high and mighty. Fact is, you can afford to be brave, if that's what you want to call it. Bet you had doctors on standby, a whole team, right? It was bloody scary seeing my sister screaming like that, not knowing if she would die. No blood bags, no plasma. Did she hemorrhage? Victra asks. I nod. I didn't know someone had that much blood. Victra says nothing. I loved her so much, you know. I was afraid. My hands were shaking on the scissors so bad, I thought I'd take out my own eye. Sister's bleeding there. I thought they'd shoo me out. But all those women were looking at me, waiting for me to do my part. And she was smiling, pale as milk. Of all those women, she chose me. Me. I shake my head. It doesn't mean you're weak to ask for help, but we'll do it your way. I head to the door. Harmony has reason to hate me, and you, she says. I stop and turn slightly. My mother knew of a radiation leak in her clan's mine. Deeming it advantageous from a tax perspective, she chose not to make immediate repairs. Radiation medication was distributed to the Gammas via the Laureltide boxes. As I understood it, the intent was for them to sell it to the other clans. Instead, the Gammas hoarded it while the others died due to tribal grudges. I thought my mother's plans derailed. Then she told me that their greed was exactly according to plan. I remember her words to this day. They'll be too busy hating each other to ever hate us. She came down to distribute medicine herself a month later. Beneficent. And you just let it happen, I ask, unsurprised by the cruelty of the logic. I wasn't who I am now. Why didn't you tell Volga to shoot Harmony? She killed your family. Was it because you thought I would kill Volga before you could pull the trigger? Would you have? Yes. I protect mine above all else, because no one else ever does. So, I discovered the truth to her words in my cell. I've chewed on the questions she asks for days as we scrambled across the highlands. I didn't know at the time why I told Volga not to shoot. There was too much anger and confusion to really suss it. But it wasn't fear. Harmony will pay the debt she owes me, I say. Not your baby. She measures me a long time before speaking. Revenge is best dealt with a patient hand. With what Fig gave you when she died, you won't have to wait long. What is it? I ask. I don't know, not entirely, but it was what made Fig different. I am different. I know that. I had things you didn't, but I saw evil too. Only difference is you saw the bottom, I saw the top. I wasn't born the woman I am. I made me. That's the problem with your people. You're arrogant, so busy preaching you need a clan to do everything. But you take the clan away and you fall apart, like you did in that cell. So easy to blame others for failing you, for leaving you, for mistreating you. She sets her hands on her belly, grimacing at the pain as a spasm flickers across it. Some things are about the power of one. With what you have in your head, you need to know that. Now, if you can exist without tormenting me with sympathy, I'll show you what a woman can do by herself. But first, be a dare, and tell Volga to tie up our hosts. She smiles nastily. As an unctuous girl once said, we don't know them. Victra hunches over as the storm rattles the windows, consumed with and by her labour so that nothing exists in the world except the life inside her. Her triceps flex as her hands grip her muscled thighs. Her feet are planted on the stone floor over a thin layer of linens, like she's about to take flight. Her razor waits by her foot. She is not invulnerable like I thought. She feels the pain. Sweat beads on her upper lip and dangles there, dropping only when a low moan escapes her. It melts into the sound of the storm as it howls through the chimney in the common room. She rolls her head like a fever victim, breathing heavily, scraping her feet on the ground. Muscles spasm in her lower back and around her taut belly. A huge contraction racks her, forcing her to a quarter squat. She tenses there, exhaling a low, primal moan that lasts and lasts until a gush of liquid ruptures out from between her legs and becomes a slow dribble. A tuft of matted hair peeks out. She brings her right hand back behind and between her legs, her left to the front to spread herself as she continues to push. The crown of the baby's head juts through, trickling liquid onto the floor. Then she brings both hands back around onto her thighs and crouches a little lower for the final effort. The baby's whole head is hanging out. With another sustained push, its shoulders slip through and a purple mass of flesh spurts out. She brings her arms down and catches the baby at the base of its skull, supporting it as she sweeps it upright while falling to her knees in a motion both complex and instinctive. She sorts the life string from the baby's neck as it begins to gurgle, and then cups it in her arms. Victra brings her mouth to her baby's face, sucks to clear the mouth and nose, and then spits on the floor. The baby is blotched and viscous and alive. Its eyes are clamped shut against the dim light of the room. It cries until it finds her nipple, then takes it in its mouth and, cocooned in the arms of its wet, scared mother, grows still. Victra sways there, in a world of two, rocking the baby so tenderly, so intimately, with such encompassing love that I am unable to look away. They begin to pulse, to throb with colour, the warmth inside them, or maybe the emotions in me triggering the parasite so that their thermal heat glows in the coolness of the room. It's a boy, Sevro, Victra's glowing mouth whispers. You guessed right. And for a moment, as I watch, as I see the heat that makes their bodies, the vibrations that form her words, I believe the hero of my brothers can hear his wife, wherever he might be. Just as I believe deep down, I could feel the death of Angus and Dagan and Liam, the last of my family. Neither time nor space can sever the strands of life between those we love. Not really. It is not the parasite telling me this. It is my heart. In the room, I feel my father and mother, my sister and my brothers. The joy we had is no lesser for having ended in horror. It is not gone, as I thought it was. It is here, in these moments that are larger than the world itself. They were alive. They lived. They were loved. "Come say hello," Victra says. I'm startled back into the room. "Me? I thought you weren't an idiot." She leans the baby close to me as he snuffles at her breast. I take his little hand and smile as his fingers curl around mine. He is slightly larger than my brothers were, but those eyes that will mark him different from them are closed. The winged sigils on his hands are bone, not yet coated with gold. He is just a child. "Hello, little Himanthus," I say, just as I once said to my sister's children as they took their first breaths. "Welcome to the worlds." I leave Victra alone. The door bumps against Volga, who waits outside with a blank look on her face. I close the door behind me and nod. She breaks into a smile, as confused as I am to find herself celebrating the birth of Julii's child. Through the cracked door, I hear Victra whisper a benediction to her child. "My son." Her voice falters. "My son, you are of the gens Julii. Your ancestors looked to the night sky when there was nothing but drips of light in the darkness. Roads they built to stitch that light together. You are also of the gens Barker, guardians of the human race. You will be hated, and you will hate. You will love and be loved. You will fall and you will rise. Never will you know peace, but you will know joy. You may even sail the dark seas in ships and lie beside nymphs in alien woods. You are your father's son, forever my boy, forever our Ulysses." Chapter 66. Lyria. The Julii's Bill. Victra eats what's left of the soup and bread at the kitchen table. Ulysses is swaddled in her arms. The storm still howling outside, having lasted through the night. In a few hours, it'll be daylight. Volga and I stay awake on coffee. We all know we can't stay here long. If we keep Cormac and his family inside after the storm dies, it'll arouse suspicion from the townfolk, and there's no telling which of them will call the Red Hand. We have to be gone as soon as possible. Volga and I want to wait, fearing Victra isn't strong enough. She looks paler than I've ever seen her, and even if golds are golds, they're still human. She needs to rest. We manage to convince her to let Volga go to the transmitter now. Cormac offers to take her, but Victra doesn't want the man out in the village. His son volunteers, but that's just the same. Volga can find it on her own. Better they stay tied at the table. I stand with her in the open doorway. Volga squints into the swirling snow, then back at Ulysses in the crook of Victra's arm as his mother finishes off a heel of bread. Volga's left Fig's black orb by the fire. "I wish I could have watched," she says, mildly jealous. "Why did she let you?" "Think she wanted to teach me a lesson. I've never seen a baby born." "Never?" She shakes her head. I pat her arm. "You'll get your chance one day if you like. It is something." "No," Volga says. "They made me without a womb." She sets her hand on her rifle. "You know, with enough money, bet they can change that now." 20 million, Volga says. 20 million is what it takes. I tilt my head. Is that why she's been doing all this? Is that what Fig's bounty means to her? I feel a sudden heaviness in my heart for the big woman. Not just because of the confession, but because she chose to trust me with it. She smiles and pats my shoulder closer than we were even the night before. I will be back soon. Guard them well. I watch Volga disappear into the snow and close the door. She is a good person. Well, maybe not good. But what is good? She was raised by a bastard. But my father was a bastard too. Not always, and not to me. But I know how he hoarded our laurel-tied boxes, how other families perished while ours grew strong. All my family's joy grew in the shadow of that truth, whether I want to admit it or not. Maybe it wasn't my mother's death that broke the man. Maybe it was his conscience. Victra tries her best to stay awake after Volga leaves, but after the pace she set through the highlands and the labour, it seems even a gold has limits. She keeps falling asleep at the table. I convince her to go rest with Ulysses, telling her I'll keep watch. By the time she wakes, her men will be on their way here. She smiles at that, no doubt thinking of her daughters, her husband. I sit at the table with my gun in my lap and glance sideways at the orb. The flames from the hearth fire bend along its glossy surface. I pick it up and run my hands over the smooth metal. Its whispers tickle the back of my mind. What's inside you? Across the table, Cormac yawns, tied to his chair by Volga's knots. His son, Allred, sleeps on a blanket by the fire, his hands bound in front of him. Maybe I was too hard on them. Maybe we shouldn't have tied them up. But with Volga gone, I sure as hell am not going to have a crisis of conscience. I may have a gun, but I'm no obsidian, and Victra looks worn through. Sorry if we gave your girl a fright, I say, setting the orb back down, considering how she is, and about the binds. Cormac looks up in surprise. Ah, nothing to be done, lass. If there's ever a reason to hold a gun to someone's head, it's a baby. Can't say I ever heard a quieter birth than that one. She's one tough peerless. I look to the cracked door. I've never met anyone like her. They make them that way, he says. Tough. Less nerves than we got. That ain't true, I reply. It wasn't easy for her. Seem to know a fine bit about them, he says. Been wondering myself how a Martian mine lass ended up with one of them. Your lilt. Ain't never heard a high red with one like that, and your eyes are too muddy for a city shade. True enough, I'm from Sumeria. Which mine? Casada, I lie. Casada? He frowns. You don't sound like you're from Casada. Know many Casadans? I ask. Can't say I do. Solves that. How'd you end up here? You're southern too. Our clan settled here to fish early on in the war, Cormac explains. We was one of the first mines freed. It isn't easy, but labour's a fine thing if it's for yourself. We sell most of our hull to suppliers in Attica. Goes to Olympia, Aegea, even as far as Luna. Imagine that. Came back here after I lost me leg, figured I'd like to spend more time with me kin than lose the rest of me. I hear Victra call my name from the other room. I glance at Cormac. Ain't going anywhere, lass, he says. I get up from the table. Peeking through the doorway, I see Victra half asleep with Ulysses cradled in her arms. You mind fetching me some snow? Aches like a broken tooth down there. I shut the door and take stock of our hosts. Allred's still asleep by the fire, and Cormac's yawning and resting his head on the chair's back. Don't move, I tell him, just grabbing her some ice. I prop open the door, making sure I can keep an eye on them as I fill a cloth with ice from outside. Volga's footprints are already being filled in by the snow. They lead around the right of the house toward the old base. Something ticks around the corner. Glancing back inside, I see Cormac with his eyes closed. I leave the doorway to check on the sound. It's coming from a frosted window set in the stone. I clear away some of the snow with my pistol. Cormac's mute daughter looks out from her dark bedroom. Most of her is in shadow, but her pale face looks like a ghost's. She taps on the window with her fingers. When she sees me, her eyes implore me. She points back into the house, then lifts a hand and presses it to the window. It is covered in blood from a gash she made down the centre. A chill that has nothing to do with the wind goes through me. A shadow moves behind her. Her face tilts down and her head slams forward into the heavy glass, shattering it into large, jagged shards. I drop the ice and run back to the door with my gun. Cormac is no longer at the table. Allred's place by the fire is empty. His severed bindings lie on the floor. I shout for Victra and slip on a patch of ice as I try to run through the doorway. I fall forward and something passes over my head and goes thunk into the wooden doorframe. I hit the floorboards hard and turn to see Allred struggling to pull a sling blade out of the doorframe. He jerks it out and turns to chop me in the belly, only to stare down the barrel of my gun. He puts a hand out. Please! I fire, and his arm becomes a spray of red. He looks quizzically at it. Shattered bones peek through the skin as it hangs from his shoulder socket like a wet rag. He screams. My second round takes off his head from the chin up. He's thrown halfway out the door. I scramble to my feet. The world tight and vivid. Something bright screams past and burns a hole through the wall behind me. I drop to my belly as more particle beams lance out from Breyer's bedroom, filling the air with the scent of ozone. I shoot back through the wall. The fire now consumes a corner of the room, spreading from the blanket to the table in the kitchen. Smoke clouds the room and stings my eyes. Victra's door bursts open and she storms out with her razor, sees me on the floor, all red dead in the doorway and the holes from the firelight. Red Hand, I rasp. Did you get him? Don't know. Stay down. She slinks through the smoke and puts her ear next to one of the holes. Then she bursts through the door. I follow her and find Cormac on the ground holding in his guts. His gun lies across the room. Victra kneels on Cormac's chest and stabs her razor through his hand. He grunts in pain. How many are in the village? She asks. She puts a thumb in his eye. How many? Hundreds, he laughs. In the old base. You're dead gold. They'll have heard the shots. They'll have your obsidian. Your worm food, slaver. You and your spawn. Do you have a vehicle? He just laughs. She digs her finger into his eye, but he won't say any more. She kills him with a punch that crumples the right side of his skull. I hear a gurgling from behind a dresser and find Breya there. The crochet in his bedroom was hers. She's not his daughter. His wife isn't out on the boats. This child is his wife. A piece of glass is embedded in her neck. Blood gurgles from the wound and out her mouth as she stares up at me. Victra's no longer in the room. I hear her coming back. She appears at the bedroom doorway with Ulysses wrapped in a quilt. She's barefoot and dizzy from the smoke. Lyria, on me! I look down at the bleeding girl. We can't leave her! Victra looks down at the girl, up at me, and gives a look of apology before tucking Ulysses tight, wheeling away, and disappearing out the door. I gasp for air as I drag Breya out of the burning house and lay her down in the snow. It's all right, lass, I say between coughs. I've got you now. It's just a scratch. I've got you. Her blood slicks my hands and stains the snow. There's so much of it. She can't die here. Not this poor girl. Not after surviving that man, if it's what I think. Not like this. She can't die. I press my hands against the wound to try and stop the bleeding, but the glass cuts so deep, all I can do is watch her until she becomes as pale as the snow and her eyes stare up at me with the flames of the burning house reflected in them. I didn't know her, but I felt she could be me, or my sister. There's shouts from the village. Having heard the gunfire from their own homes, red men rush toward the burning house. There's 20, 50 coming. Could all the Red Hand? A woman in the doorway of a nearby house waves for me to run from them. Victra's already gone, her tracks leading back into the highlands. I chase after her, away from the shouting men. I lose the tracks twice in the storm. Try as I might, I cannot summon the parasite at will. Wind bites my face and my fingers are already numb. I don't think I'll catch Victra. Her strides are easily twice the length of mine. But I keep running. My side's got a stitch. My lungs ache from the cold. Something roars in the sky, deeper than the sound of the wind. Several ships glow through the swirling snow as they pass overhead. I trudge through frozen creek beds, through a wood of lonely aspen, and into an evergreen forest before I'm hopelessly lost. I run in circles trying to find Victra's tracks, but they've disappeared, as if she suddenly grew wings. She must have taken to the trees. I search them before realizing I might be leading them to her. What could I even do to help her? I'd slow her down. Part of me knows this is my fault. But she wanted ice. Volga needed to go to the old base. None of them thought Cormac was Red Hand. None of them saw through him. I suspected. I kept close watch, until I didn't. How did they cut through the ropes? The wind dies down not long after morning comes. Snow falls in large flakes. The world takes on the colour of gunmetal. I've carried my pistol with me, but it's got only 3 rounds left. I stay in the forest, not knowing what to do, listening for sounds of hunting men, dogs, or ships. I hear nothing, just the silence of a world turning. Knowing I can't go anywhere without finding out what happened to Volga, I make my way back to the town, sticking to ravines when possible, and running quick as I can through open fields. Climbing over a fence, I see a splash of colour amidst another copse of trees. On the edge of the tree line, blood paints snow churned by boots. It splashes the white bark of the trees, many of which are fallen or shattered from a gunfight. A few are cut cleanly, probably from Victra's razor. Something lies in the snow. As I bend to pick it up, I flinch away. It's a hand with red sigils on it. More than a dozen trails of blood lead to a patch of earth where the snow melted away. Must be where their shuttle landed. I don't see any tracks leading off. They've got her. They've got her and Ulysses. A stone lodges in my throat. Then I see crows fluttering around an odd-shaped tree. Something is wrong with that tree. I stumble toward it, my heart knowing before my head, pulled along by the dread weaving its fingers through me. The crows scatter away. My shadow darkens the tree. My legs tremble, my knees buckle. I fall to the ground, unable to accept it, unable to look away from the small trickles of blood that wind down the bark, unable to understand why they nailed the baby upside down to the trunk of the tree. Chapter 67. Lyria. Numb. Ulysses is dead. I sit watching the snowfall and feel nothing. I see but don't feel myself moving as I take Ulysses down and wrap him in my coat. It is not easy or clean. I try to dig a grave with my hands, but the earth is frozen. I don't realize it is too hard to dig through until I notice my fingers bleeding. When I look back at the lifeless infant in my jacket, I break down. I don't know what to do with him. I can't bury him here in the dirt as if he's part of this world. He didn't even get to spend a day in it. I won't leave him here to be eaten by scavengers. Scavengers have done enough to him already. All I can do is take him with me. I shake as I walk. I'll die if I don't put my jacket on. But I can't let him be cold. His newborn flesh is so thin, so very thin. I walk. I'm not sure where or why, but I find myself back at the edge of the village, looking down at it. There's a commotion outside the base. Half a dozen new ships sit there, including the one with the Ambrosia advert. More than 50 men with guns mill about. How many helped kill my family? How many of them raped my sister before they cut her throat to the bone? How many nailed this baby to the tree after smashing its skull? They're surrounding something, kicking it. I feel my legs carrying me down the hill, my hand on the cold grip of the pistol. 3 shots left. 3 left for Harmony. At the edge of the town, as I'm waylaid by a thicket of dead brush, I see the crowd part and Harmony giving orders to her men. She looks the same as she did 2 weeks before, the same as when she killed my brother, except now she's wearing a winter coat and carrying Victra's bloody razor. Her men follow her orders and drag what they were kicking onto their ships. It's Victra and Volga. I break into a jog. I reach the burned-out house where we thought to find shelter, go past it through narrow lanes leading between several other houses. I'm still 100 meters off by the time the ship lifts off, some red-hand men on the ground cheering them. The ships head north, and I stand there with my jacket around Ulysses, my pistol useless in my hand.
"Girl,"